I've been asked by Kim Borgata to announce that she is having a kirtan at her apartment tomorrow evening at 7:30. It's 6250 33rd Avenue Northeast, apartment C, like the ocean, she said. And I told her that began with an O. Anyway, she'd appreciate it if all of those of you who would like to would come and partake of this. Also, anyone who has not signed up for the Easter brunch, would you please do so this evening? This is your last opportunity. As I've repeated during the last few times, each one should bring a main dish and then something a little extra. And I suppose some of you came here tonight wondering if I was going to announce that it was the 4th of July or Christmas on account of the other evening. You know, I announced that it was Ash Wednesday, and a few people picked it up, quite a few. Those were the ones who asked me how I felt that night. I think they thought I was probably getting either senile or having a nervous breakdown. And the rest of them told me how wonderful it was. It was just what they needed. And I don't know which ones came up, but anyway, it was God who arranged it. You see, I wasn't here on Ash Wednesday, so I guess he felt that maybe I should say something about Ash Wednesday, as long as it was still the Lenten season. So I spoke to him about it again, as I always did, and we both had a good laugh over it, and we hope that you got a lot out of it anyway. But that's not the half of what I did. I forgot an appointment with Bonnie yesterday morning. I had to cancel a dental appointment because I was out of town for the day, but I forgot to notify Bonnie, who was kind enough to offer to pick me up. And then I had another appointment in the afternoon, which I also forgot to announce. I had a little deal on the recorded call this morning, and it was one of those days. But I tell you, I had an appointment with my dentist this morning, and after I finished with him, my appointment was at 10. I got in at 11:30 finally to see him, and he didn't remember anything about what we were talking about before. He didn't remember that he had asked me to get x-rays, the rest of it. And I felt just great. I had company. So he was very apologetic. And finally, he was in such bad shape that I reached over the counter and patted him on the arm, and I said, "Doctor, would you like me to give you a treatment?" So I just thought I'd share that with you. But I'm really perfectly all right. These things happen, and all for God's purpose. You know, we have to blame everything on him, especially I, because he's the only one that does anything in this form. You can't all have that excuse. I'd like to read to you tonight from Glimpses of Divine Vision. The Divine Mother, who presides over all activities, events, and happenings in the universe, means always well. The sole purpose of her work is only to bring about harmony and peace. The doubting mind sees discord and confusion in her activity. The Mother is a veritable personification of love, so none of her actions can be for anything but good. The sun, by his very nature, can shed only light and is incapable of producing darkness. Similarly, the mother's doings are always in every way beneficial. In her, there is no evil. The so-called evil is the product of a mind that has no faith in her. Pray to her this way. The reason I'm hesitating is spelled Y-A-W. I think it's backwards. O Mother of the World. Well, I can show you it says here. I knew that wasn't right, so I translated it. O Mother of the World, I am thy ignorant child. Guide and control me as thou wilt. Thou art my only protector, and I am thy child. I am ever thine. Bear me always in thy bosom as thy eternal child. This is the refuge I seek. Eternity is the link that unites me to thee. Being ever in tune with thee, let me be thy child. God arranges all things in his own way and at the time he appoints. Yours is to work in the free and cheerful spirit of a child, leaving all the results to be determined by him. God himself is a child playing this universal game. Everywhere is he, and everybody is he. Sri Rama's infinite love, light, power, and bliss. He is the most loving mother and the most powerful master of the universe. He is seated in all his glory in the hearts of you all. Indeed, Sri Ram's name is marvelously potent. It has transformed a robber into the great Saint Valmiki. It has helped Kirbadas, Tulsidas, Ramdas, and many others to cross the ocean of samskara. That great name is as sweet as nectar itself. When, by his grace, this name has firmly settled on the mind and tongue of anybody, that person becomes blessed and attains eternal freedom, bliss, and peace. Sri Ram is pure love, a veritable sea of love, absorbing, permeating, nay, flooding the whole universe. O mind, ever be intoxicated with the supreme, indescribable love. Be merged in it and realize all that you behold as the expression of that love. When all forms, all things, all actions, all happenings have their source in this love, where is pain, sorrow, doubt, or fear? You live, move, and have your being in this love. Sri Ram is this love. To think of him, to meditate on him, to repeat his name, to talk of him, to write of him, is to realize him, to realize and attain this love. Through love alone, you have to reach him. He is without form and name. He is beyond all divandas and gunas, but you can go to him only by worshiping him through name and form. Sri Ram is that name. Universe is that form. Love this name in his manifested form. Love him with all your might. Let your mind find its perfect union with him, and let the body be active as an instrument in his hands. Tonight I thought, as much as it is Good Friday, that I would read to you from the Bible about all that happened to Jesus. Not all of it, but some of it. And then we'll talk about it a little bit. St. Matthew chapter 26, beginning with verse 14. Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priests and said unto them, What will ye give me, and I will deliver him unto you? And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time he sought opportunity to betray him. Now, the first day of the feast of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus, saying unto him, Where wilt thou that we prepare for thee to eat the Passover? And he said, Go into the city to such a man, and say unto him, The Master saith, My time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at thy house with my disciples. And the disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. Now, when the even was come, he sat down with the 12. And as they did eat, he said, Verily I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me. And they were exceeding sorrowful, and began every one of them to say unto him, Lord, is it I? And he answered and said, He that dippeth his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. The Son of Man goeth as it is written of him. But woe unto that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had not been born. Then Judas, which betrayed him, answered and said, Master, is it I? He said unto him, Thou hast said. And as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it, and brake it, and gave it to the disciples, and said, Take, eat, this is my body. And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, Drink ye all of it, for this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine, until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. Now we are told in metaphysical terms that Judas represents the sex force, and that when it comes time for you to have this tremendous experience of going through the mystical crucifixion, that the temptation comes, as it never has before in your life, to expel this sacred life force from within your body. I know that this is true because it happened to me. And I fought it for 3 long days. And the master, my master, had told me that whenever there was difficulty this way, that one should put ice cubes, use always ice cubes. This is both on the head and on the genital organs. And there wasn't any ice, there wasn't any electricity at the ashram, so I used well water, which was not too cool, and I fought this for 3 long days with everything I had. And still it persisted. Still I retained. But finally I became terrifically angry, and I threw the cloth, the wet cloth, across the room, and I said, I have had it. This has to cease. I am the master. And as of that moment, it stopped. Which goes to show what you can do with your willpower, if you will. Now, every 29 and a half days, as I have explained to many of you, there is a sacred seed, a master seed, which comes from the sacred cloister or claustrum underneath the brain. That seed is carried by a substance, part of which goes to the pineal gland, which is called the Joseph gland, and the other part goes to the Mary gland, the pituitary gland. And the Mary gland is the gland which carries that master seed. It is called the Christ seed. And these two glands functioning carry this fluid, and Mary carries the Christ or the potential Christ within her. And they start on their way to Jerusalem to be taxed. And as I have explained to you, this does not mean taxes such as all of us are worrying about now. It means that that you are to be taxed in the spiritual sense. You are to be tempted. And it is not an easy road that you are about to travel. You will be tested, you will be taxed to the utmost of your capacity to stand it. But nevertheless, this is the way it starts on its journey. Then, one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priests and said unto them, What will ye give me, and I will deliver him unto you? And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time he sought opportunity to betray him. Now, I have talked about the sex force, but also the 30 pieces of silver represent something else. And as God explained it to me at the time I was going through this tremendous experience, there are 10 subtle qualities of the mind. And with everything that is within you, when you start out on this sacred experience, you want to know the truth of what you have been taught all of your life. You want to have it taught to you in vision. It is as though you want the Christ himself to speak to you through your power of hearing, so that you may know beyond all question of a doubt that it is true. And I remember myself sitting on a long board bench in meditation, saying to God, I've got to know. What is this all about? Why am I having these experiences? And so my desire was so great, he lifted me up and he showed me. Now we have 3 bodily jars. The spirit is encased in 3 bodily jars. The physical, the astral or the electrical body, and the idea or the causal body. Now because there are 10 subtle qualities of the mind, these apply to each one of the bodily jars. And so, again, we have the multiplicity of 10, or 30, for the 3 jars, 10 in each one. And the mind, the consciousness, has to work while the soul is being released from each one of these bodily jars. So that is the 30 pieces of silver that must be paid for the knowledge of the truth. Then, of course, he sends the disciple out to get a man, and saying to him, "The master saith, my time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at thy house with my disciples." Then he announces to all of them, when they were assembled, that one among them was the one that would betray him. And so each one of them said, "Is it I? Is it I?" But it was only when Jesus asked that question, or not Jesus, but I should say Judas asked that question, that he said that he that dippeth his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. And they were eating Jesus took the bread. As they were eating, Jesus took the bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to the disciples, saying, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, "Drink ye all of it, for this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." Now again, this is spoken of symbolically. And to this day, in many of the churches, particularly in the Roman Catholic Church, the priest takes the wafer and puts it in the wine and gives it to each disciple who comes to take communion at the altar. This is the symbol of the body and the blood of Christ, but it is only the outer manifestation. I have told all of you about my tremendous visit with the wonderful Mother Teresa in Calcutta, who is a Roman Catholic and who is doing such a tremendous job. And we were talking about the fact that so many people were doing so many things against God. This was her version. And I said that I didn't think that was true. They weren't doing them against God, but rather they were forgetting God totally in their pursuit of the pleasure of the senses. And I further went on to tell her that I thought far too much emphasis had been placed upon sin and far too little upon original innocence. I told her also that I didn't have any sinners, that I only had children of God, and that they were indeed a beautiful and enlightened group. So as we talked, all of a sudden she said to me, "Mother, you were a Catholic, weren't you?" And I said, "Yes, Mother, I was." So we talked a little bit longer, and she didn't say anything more at that time, but after we were finished, she said, "Would you like to see the chapel?" And I said, "Yes, I would." So she took me in there. We knelt down together. And as we came out, we started down the ramp. She took hold of my arm. We walked down the ramp arm in arm. And she said to me, "But Mother," she said, "you must take communion again." She said, "You must take the body and the blood of Christ." And I said, "No, Mother, I'm sorry. I can't do that." And she said, "Oh, you must. I could not live without taking the body and the blood of my Lord every morning." And I said, "Mother, you are following only the form. This is symbolic of that which actually happens within the individual who is going or about to go through the crucifixion." And I said, 21 years ago, I went through this tremendous mystical crucifixion in an ashram here in India, at Swami Ramdas's in Kerala State. And I said, I held the Holy Eucharist from my own body in my own hand at the end of the third experience. And I said, having done that, I said, how in the world can I go back and follow the form again when I have paid the price for the reality and I know the truth? And she said, "Ah, yes, that is the way it is. Well then, will you bless me and pray for me as I shall bless and pray for you?" And I said, "Yes, Mother, I'll be happy to." And so this is the way we parted, you see. So I know the true meaning, and I have described this Eucharist to you, that this master seed is like a small white styrofoam capsule. And as I broke it open, it came through my throat, and I didn't know what it was I was feeling in there, but it was at the end of the third experience when the consciousness was being released from the idea or the causal body. I broke it open, and there was one perfect drop of blood in the center of it. This was the true Eucharist, the body and the blood of, and they were merely symbolically taking the bread and the wine in honor of that, in remembrance of him. Now, in many of the churches today where they still have communion, not the Roman Catholic, but in some of the other churches, Norman Vincent Peale's is one. I attended his collegiate church in New York. They serve grape juice and little tiny squares of bread, which I think is much better all the way around. Anyway, this was what happened up until this point. And he said, "But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." And when they had sung an hymn, they went on out into the Mount of Olives. Now, I have explained to you the journey of this sea. It goes down, it is deposited in the conical-like cave behind the stomach. And the word Bethlehem means house of bread. Then it is held there until King Herod is dead or the passions subside. Then it resumes its journey and returns to Galilee. Now, the word Galilee in the Bible dictionary means the circuit. And so it goes the circuit, it crosses the ford at the bottom and starts up the spine again. The Mount of Olives, it is the crucifixion takes place at the Christ Center, right here at this cavity in the back, right underneath the cranium. That is the center where the life force enters the body. So as the two-edged sword, the positive and negative electrical forces of the universe enter in and go into the brain, it comes in contact with this upcoming Christ seed, and that's where the crucifixion takes place, right there. And that is the Mount of Olives, or as God showed me, the place where the two eyes are that are shaped like olives. And when they had sung an hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. Then saith Jesus unto them, "All ye shall be offended because of me this night, for it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee." And so he is saying that the Lamb of God, the Savior within you, is about to be smitten. And in that case, the sheep of the flock are all scattered because you won't have the leader, the guidance that you've had before. Peter answered and said unto him, "Though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended." Jesus said unto him, "Verily I say unto thee, that this night, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice." Peter said unto him, "Though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee." Likewise also said all the disciples. Then cometh Jesus with them into a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, "Sit ye here, while I go and pray yonder." And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, "My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here, and watch with me." And he went a little farther, and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." And he cometh unto the disciples, and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, "What, could ye not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away again the second time, and prayed, saying, "O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done." And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Now, what does this mean? "Verily I say unto thee, that this night, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice." And Peter said to him, "Though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee." Likewise also saith all the disciples. And so on. So we'll continue from there. Because remember that this is what Peter said. Now Peter spoke the truth. The Son of Man represents the human ego, which is pure delusion. and which in fact does not exist. That human ego must die. So that is why Peter is made to deny the Christ three different times. Not the Christ, but the Savior, knowing him, because he was not the truth. He was pure delusion. He was the Son of Man. He was not the Son of God. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of... No, I've read that already. So it would seem that Jesus, in his hour of sorrow, was having a very difficult time drinking from this cup of bitterness which was set before him. It was a tremendous ordeal which he was about to embark upon. And he knew that he was about to die. And in truth, he didn't want to die. Master told about the saints that were fully God realized and whom God sent messages to that their hour had come. He told about Lauri Mahasya and how when the message came to him from the Father saying that it was time for him to leave the body, how a shudder went all through his frame, but how he sat and went voluntarily into samadhi. I can remember also that I did not relish the thought of what was set before me, and yet I had no idea, no knowledge, because no one had ever told me the truth of the experience as I tell it to you, and I didn't know what to expect. I only knew that with everything that was in me, with my mind, my heart, my soul, my strength, I had to give myself to God, that I had to swim through the ocean of delusion and come out on the side of true knowledge, of truth. And I knew that I wasn't going to like this cup that was set before me. And yet I said, Father, thy will be done. And I didn't sorrow over it, I remember. That it was as though I was thrilled inside of myself. I'm speaking of my own experience. As though I was thrilled inside of me, in a way. One hand I was sorrowful. One hand perhaps there was a little fear. But yet the desire to go was so great. And as I surrendered myself to him, with everything I had, I felt this joy, this ecstasy, and I felt that nothing that he would ask of me was too great, because I felt that at the end of this time, I would come up with the prize. Then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. And while yet he spoke, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he, hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Jesus and said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him something tremendous. Friend, wherefore art thou come? Because, in fact, the betrayer, while seeming to do a terrible deed, is leading the Son of Man to his death in order that he might rise again as the living, the glorious, the tremendous Christ that is the real self of every man that is born. They came then and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, Put up again that thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled, that thus it must be? In other words, he knew that he could be saved. There are many Christians today who speak of salvation. There are many who go through this charismatic experience, and they are filled with the power of the Holy Ghost. They lose consciousness temporarily. They fall, and someone is there to catch them in this power trip that is there. And when they come out of it, they start speaking with tongues. This is only the first workings of the Spirit. And sometimes it is very dangerous. And I have known people who have had this experience who have never really been right again. Most of them come out of it with a new look in their eyes. It is a light of sorts. But they think that Jesus the Christ, who lived 2,000 years ago, has given them this experience and that they are truly saved from sin. And yet it is not so, because although there is the change, many of them are very good people. They are filled with a great deal of love. Others of them, having the experience, are quite different. And they think everybody else that doesn't believe just as they do is an angel of Satan. I have experienced both kinds. Still, they think that that is all. And so they sit waiting for the day of the second coming of the Christ, and they look for him outside of themselves. And they think that they are going to be caught up in what they call the rapture. But this is the highest human experience of ecstasy. It is not the eternal bliss of God, because they have not been paid the full price. They have been saved from sin, perhaps, in one sense of the word. In other words, they have accepted Christ as their Savior. But they continue to live in the world. They continue to speak against their neighbor. Some of them foul up in the same old Ten Commandments sins as they did before. And it isn't until they really go through what the Savior went through, until they pick up their cross, which is their body, and follow in his footsteps even unto the death of the human ego, which brings on a death-like state in the body and a form of rigor mortis and the form of paralysis afterwards, that they really die to sin. And only then they're at the first part of it, because still there is the purging to be done. You must go through the state of purgatory, or purging, cleansing the body, the mind, the soul, of all that was dross within it in the human state. And then the next state is the ascension into heaven. And only when you have fully ascended into the heaven of your own being do you feel the real bliss of God, which transcends the ecstasy, which transcends the rapture, which these people hope to experience, but haven't, most of them, yet even touched. It's tremendous when you know the truth. And they, let's see, where were we here? In that same hour said Jesus to the multitudes, "Are ye come out as against a thief with swords and staves for to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and ye laid no hold on me. But all this was done that the scripture of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. And they that had laid hold on Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Peter followed him afar, off into the high priest's palace, and went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the fast came two false witnesses and said, 'This fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days.' And the high priest arose and said unto him, 'Answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee?' But Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, 'I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God.' Jesus saith unto him, 'Thou hast said, nevertheless I say unto you, thou hast said, nevertheless I say unto you, hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power, and the coming in the clouds of heaven.' Now the kingdom of heaven is within. So the only place we are going to see the Christ is in the heaven of our own being, when we use the techniques which have been given to us, when we surrender ourselves to God with all of our hearts, our minds, our souls. Then you see still the form of man, but you see him sitting in a high place at the right hand of the Father. Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, He hath spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. What think ye? They answered and said, He is guilty of death. Then did they spit in his face and buffeted him. And others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, Prophesy unto us, thou Christ, who is he that smote thee? Now Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, Thou also wast with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied before them all, saying, I know not what thou sayest. And when he was gone out into the porch, another maid saw him, and said unto them that were there, This fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. And after a while came unto him they that stood by, and said to Peter, Surely thou art also one of them, for thy speech betrayeth thee. Then began he to curse, to swear, saying, I know not the man. And immediately the cock crew. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus, which said unto him, Before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And he went out and wept bitterly. Peter could not help but deny Jesus, the Son of Man, because Peter represents the truth, the rock, that upon which the Christ said he would build his church. And that church must be built upon the truth. And he could not acknowledge Jesus, the Son of Man, the human ego, and still be the rock upon which all of the foundation is laid. So this is the way it went up until this time. This is the real truth, the real meaning of these scriptures. And I could not stand before you and tell you this truth unless I myself had experienced it. And now you have verification from others among the group. There have been several who have started going through these experiences. No one has totally completed it yet. But some have been through the first experience of releasing the consciousness from the gross body, the body of the five senses. Some are well into the releasing of the consciousness from the astral or the electrical body. But no one has attained the final state and the ascension into the heaven of his own being yet. But each one of them who has gone through this experience knows that when I give you the truth as I have given it to you tonight of these scriptures, that I do indeed speak the truth because it has also been their experience. And they know through experience that what I teach is the truth. It is high time that the truth be known. We have lived with the parables long enough. And people keep looking for something to happen, which will happen only within themselves. This is not to say that God is not all-powerful, that he could not arrange something in a tremendous heavenly way. But he said that the kingdom of heaven is within. And yet somehow always we look to the heaven outside of ourselves, that heaven up in the sky. And we expect the Christ, in whatever way, whatever form we envision him, to come floating down out of the clouds of heaven and to fulfill all of the prophecies that were made. And yet he himself said that that kingdom of heaven was to be found only within. And that is where he is going to come a second time out of that cloud of heaven. So what all of us are doing now, if we are as we should be, as disciples of God and of the Christ, we should be preparing ourselves, we should be purifying ourselves for that great moment, that great journey into the unknown, where you are taxed. And believe me, that taxing is great, because you are asked to give everything that you call your own and lay it at the feet of God. It isn't something to scoff at, to perhaps kid about, as we say, to make light of. It is a very, very serious thing. But the one who does that, the one who is not serious about it, the one who is constantly fighting every moment instead of succumbing to the teachings of the guru in order that he may or she may find his oneness with God is retarding his own spiritual progress. And that is that evil one, that one who sits on the throne of God telling himself he is God. It represents the human ego. And that human ego, in truth, does not exist, because truly, you are the Son of God. You are the infinite, living, breathing spirit that is contained in a body. You are God in human form in every sense of the word. And yet, your consciousness has been covered with layers of darkness, even as a diamond many times is hidden right in the depths of a piece of coal. And you have to dig away, you have to cut away that outer in order that you may bring forth the diamond in all of its brilliance. It takes effort. It takes constant effort. And yet how much time is wasted in resisting the truth that the guru teaches, of putting it into practice. You will never arrive. You say you are disciples of God. You say that you want to experience God realization. You want to escape from all of the thraldom of the prison of the five senses and be free in God. And yet when the guru comes and tries with everything he or she has to help you to that tremendous moment when you are a free soul, you buck that one with everything you have. You give them lip service of every type. You ridicule them. You do not respect them in many cases. And you resist with everything that is within you, the things that they are trying to help you to discover, to find, and to realize within yourself. Now, during this holy season, each and every one should take a vow to stop doing this, to realize that what they are resisting is that which will give them life eternal. They may take on many garments. They may live in additional bodies. But having once paid the full price, they will become free souls, and they come back at will to help, to lift up through their own exemplary life the Christ in every man, so that this world may change from the state that it's in. Everybody has been talking about feeling something terrific that's going to happen. Everybody is feeling depressed. And it is like the time that is spoken of in St. Matthew, where many, many strange things are happening. We find many air accidents. We find tremendous upheavals of the earth. We find hurricanes. Whole cities are wiped out. This is the time of sorrows. But remember that it says in the scriptures that but for the elect, no one would be saved. No flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, then the flesh shall be saved. So make sure that you're one of the elect. Make sure that you are making every effort to do away with this human ego, which has no reality in fact, which tries to keep you from the realization of who and what you are in God. Give up fighting and succumb to the teachings of the Christ. Reach out for him with everything you have. The guru comes, having paid the full price, to help you on the road, to guide you, to direct you, to make your path a little bit easier, so you don't have to go through the tremendous pain and torture and death that he or she had to go through. And what gratitude do you give in your hearts? What do you do to cooperate so that you too may have this wonderful experience of going through this crucifixion, shall we say? But you will not go through it with the same intensity that the guru went through it. You will not have to pay the big price, because the guru has to go through a tremendous experience in order to pay a price for the many who will follow him or her on the way to the realization of God within themselves. Who realizes it? Who appreciates it? You get lip service. You get insults. You get denials. You get every sort of treatment. You get love. It is true from many. But some buck you every inch of the way. They are the thorn of Satan in the side. And it is not easy to take. But because that one has realized his or her oneness with God, nothing daunts them. And they will go through hellfire and damnation to take that soul out of darkness into the light of God. But who really appreciates what the guru has to go through in order to do that? And yet we have this shining example of the Savior in every man and what he goes through, this state of death, how he's scourged, how he's lashed, how he is stripped and nailed to his own cross with the two thieves on each side. The forces of good and evil within himself. One trying to take him to God, and the other trying to keep him from going. That one who still wants to stay in the human ego sense and enjoy the things of the world. And that one is so stupid because he doesn't realize that if the soul pays the full price, then he now not only enjoys all of the tremendous rewards of heaven, but also those of earth. And that he can live on this earth like a king, master of himself and all that he surveys. And he is willing to pay that price. And he is crucified over and over and over again by those who fight, when all he or she is trying to do is to help that one to become the highest, the greatest of that which they are capable of becoming. And each one is capable if they have normal intelligence, because each one has God within him. God is the life. He is the intelligence. He is the power. He is the everything that you say is you inside. He is the temple. He is the church, the temple of the living God. And when you pay this full price, the release you get is so tremendous. The bliss that you feel is so great that it is absolutely indescribable. And don't think it is easy to come down from that high estate. You want to go on. You want to lose this body and go up and enjoy the rewards, the fruits of your labor. But because you look down upon suffering humanity and you see the tremendous turmoil, the tremendous things that they do against God within themselves, you take pity upon them and you agree to come back. I was given that choice. Do you want to go on or do you want to come back? And to me, there was no choice when I came to that state. All these that I see on earth became my children. I was their mother. I had to save them. I had no choice. I had to come back. And it was a very, very difficult procedure, believe me, to come back from that state which I had attained and come back and function in this world of duality in a normal, well-balanced situation. Believe me, in state of mind, it was not easy because you keep losing body consciousness and you fight to retain it because the bliss that you are experiencing is so great that how can you come down again in this world of darkness with all of the deceit, with all of the fighting, with everything that you will have to go through, and you know what it is. I remember so well the experience I had. It was when the consciousness was being released from the third bodily jar. And this was in New York. And as I looked out on the street, I saw this tremendous haze all over the place. And I looked at the people walking. Some of them were crippled. Some of them were shriveled. Some of them had deep wrinkles in their face. And they all looked as though they were burdened down and walking in darkness. And the temptation came. It came so greatly. Why do you want to come down? Why do you want to come down and help these people? And my husband tempted me. He said, what can you do for them? He said, why do you not accept what you have? And I couldn't do it. I had to come back. And I fought my way back, and believe me, it took some fighting because I kept losing consciousness out of my body all the time and drifting out. And I fought to stay in it. I fought with everything I had. And I would go to a funny show. I remember one night I couldn't retain body consciousness, and we were invited to dinner with a couple of friends. And I ate about 3 bites of this very expensive and lovely dinner, which they had invited us to, and I couldn't make it. I kept losing body consciousness. So I asked their forgiveness, and I asked my husband if he would take me to a funny show. So he looked through all the papers, and he finally found one with Danny Kaye in it. And Danny is usually very funny. So he took me there, and I tried to focus upon the picture, and that helped to some degree, but I had to fight my way down from the height to which I had attained. The ability to keep my freedom and soar into the heavens forever and forever because I had paid the full price. And of my own volition, my own desire, my own wish to help suffering humanity, I fought my way back down through all the worlds until I could function down here in a totally balanced fashion, so that no one who saw me as they walked the streets would ever know, unless they had eyes to see, what this soul had gone through, what it had become in God. And I deserve, as an individual, no credit. I'm not asking to be deified. I remember one time that I was way over in a corner by myself. I had painted myself there, apparently, and all the paint out here was all wet. And I felt so alone. So I stood in the corner for a moment, and I thought, what shall I do? Here am I, a God-realized soul now, having paid the full price, and here are all these people out here, and I'm being deified. I didn't like it there. It was awfully lonesome. So I walked over the wet paint, and I came out, and I've been playing with you and laughing with you and joking with you and being one of you ever since. And I love it that way, because you are all God in human form. And so we must laugh. We must play. These people that go around in sackcloth and ashes with a long face, patches on their clothes, telling themselves they are followers and worshipers of God, really are doing him an injustice, because God is beautiful. He is full of laughter, of light, of joy, of happiness, of power, of all the good and wonderful things in this world. And if God is bliss, if he is all of these things, why do we not enjoy him this way? So I play the part, whatever part that God wants me to play at the moment. Sometimes I'm serious, and sometimes I play the fool. Sometimes I act like I did the other night when I didn't have a brain in my head. But it was a good sermon, wasn't it? So you see what he does anyway. And that sometimes he does in order to test you, because I don't do any of these things. I don't have any time to prepare. I'm far too busy. Believe me, this past month since I came back from Hawaii, well, it's more than a month now, have been the busiest, the most terrific, the most taxing of any that I can remember having in a good many years. It's night and day, and they are all tough cases. I don't have a minute to myself. Then somebody says, when are you going to write your book? When are you going to do this? I think, oh, Lord, you know, God bless you. When he lets me, that's the answer. He is running this show. I'm not. And all I can do is to keep my mind fixed on him. And why do I need to? He has become my very self. And what is left in this form is only the witness of that which goes on. Whatever he tells me to do, this I do. Because I have paid the full price under the law. Believe me, I have. I died. And I rose again from the dead. And I went through the state of rigor mortis, which was total paralysis. And I had to work my way out of that tomb, out of that paralysis, out of that death state. And believe me, it was a frightening thing when one day I realized that I had died. I hadn't realized it before. And I wondered why, at that particular period, people would shy away from me. It was because, you know how it is when you're around dead people? You go there because you respect the dead, and because also you want to comfort the living, those who are left behind. But you don't really enjoy being there, and you really heave a big sigh of relief when you get out. Well, this is what I had to go through, and I couldn't understand, you see, why people were treating me this way when I had paid such a tremendous price, and all I needed, all I wanted was love. I wanted understanding. I had been through hell and back, literally, and I didn't get it. And all of a sudden, one day, he showed me that I actually had died. And I tell you, the cold chills ran up and down my spine. It was not a very pleasant experience. But out of that came some tremendous realizations out of it. And they kept coming for years and years and years. It took me 15 whole years to go through everything that I went through and to gradually work myself into the state which I now enjoy so that I can function like any other human being on this earth. I can play with you, I can laugh with you, I can work with you, and nobody who has not been given the vision by God knows that I am any different than anyone else. And that's the way I like it. Because we are all one in Him. No one is greater than God. Not anyone. But each of us have that potential within ourselves. Remember that the Christ said, and it was one of the most tremendous things He ever said, "Know ye not that ye are gods?" And look what we do with it. Look how we fight it. Look how we fight the guru sometimes when that one has sacrificed their lives in order to give us the truth. Who stays in a human body only to help us to realize that same truth within ourselves and to come face to face with the glory that is God within them, their real self. Look how we fight. Look how we renege on every little thing, how we find excuses not to do what we should, not to meditate, not to live the life. How we speak about one another, how we gossip, how we revile, how we tear down people. Do you not realize that every time you do that, you are denying God in that form? Put your mind on Him. Be willing to go through the crucifixion yourself. Though He were dead, still He lives, and have I not proven it? I stand before you, and there were many, many witnesses, believe me, and many of them still live. And the last time I was in India, some of them were still there, and they remembered what I went through for God. I invite you all to love Him as much as I love Him. That you give your life for Him. You will not go through what I went through. I have promised you that. And those of you who are going through the same experience know that they are going through it in a very light manner by comparison. They cannot know fully because they weren't there. But believe me, it was something. I paid the most tremendous price. But as God told me, I was leading the way for the new order, for the truth. You may believe that or not. It's not important to me, only to you. But that's what I was shown. And I will never forget the night when Papa was telling to all of the people that we were seated under the stars. He was telling about the scriptures, and he was treating them as though the scriptures were the truth. And so I confronted with him, and I asked him if it was not the truth, that the scriptures were not really the story of every man's evolution from the human to the divine. And that these things were all just parables or fairy stories that were woven around the truth so that man would not have his reward before he had paid the price and was ready. And I will never forget that moment as long as I lived. He just pierced me with his eyes. And there was just like a bolt of lightning went right through the center of my forehead. And he said, "You have made Him say it." And that's when it started. That's when my crucifixion started. And believe me, it was something. And yet, every day that crucifixion goes on. Every day I pay the price. Not for myself, but for those who follow with me. I pay the price. I bear a part of it. In order to free a spot inside of them where the truth may be placed instead of the parable. Remember what Jesus said, "If you love me, follow my commandments." And I say that unto you. If you love God in this form, then get busy. Stop wasting time. Do what you should. Spend your time in meditation. Give love and respect to God, Christ, and Guru. I will still continue to laugh with you, to play with you, because that's the way I am. And I have more fun than anybody, because to me, God is laughter. He is joy. He is happiness. He is all the wonderful things in this world. God is what you make Him. So ask yourself, what do I want my God to be? If you want to live in misery, if you want to live forever separated in your consciousness from Him, If you want to continue to bear burdens on your back and have a Good Friday all of the days of your life, he will let you do it because he made you in his image and likeness, and he gave you free will. Either to follow him, to obey his commandments, to become what you should become. Soft, loving, gentle people, but yet firm as a rock in your command over yourself and all that you survey. Let him do the work. Stop trying to fight everything that's trying to be done in order to help you. Don't make me a Sisyphus rolling the stone on my back up the hill all the way and you along with me. Release yourselves. Get the freedom and the knowledge of the fact that you are in truth the Son of God. And when Easter Sunday comes, you will rise from the dead, the death of ignorance and of darkness, and you will experience, like I have experienced, the glory of his infinite presence.